Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Roger in, I wouldn't say warm, but nice and sunny Okotox here in Alberta, Canada. Welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio, everybody. We have a two-hour, a lot of discussions we are going to have today. And I can promise you it will be exciting. It will be exciting. A lot of good stories. Move on to Titus. How are you, my brother?
I'm okay. How are you, everybody?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. There is a story we are going to begin with Titus. I don't know if it is it is an unconventional story. It is actually my experience here in Canada and Okotox, where we are in Western Canada in Alberta, about sunshine. We'll talk about it. Let me say hello to 314. The line is open. Okay, 314. Last four numbers 4644. Good morning.
Hello, Roger. How are you? And you also, Titus.
You have read my mind. I really needed you. Yankee today. I really needed you. There is, because the first half I'm going to deal with a lot of American stories, and I want to hear from you. I want you to educate us. Some of us don't understand the story. For instance, the Brown versus the Board of Education. What was it about? But we are going to talk about that. Let me, as others come, they'll be joining us. Area code 972, last four numbers, 1182. Good morning.
Good morning, Roger. I'm still at the smelter.
hear your voice.
You will not
as, as always. Yeah, yeah. Well, the number surprised me. Join me at Titus. One of the things I think I posted on Facebook yesterday, maybe Nathan saw it, was the sunshine which we had. We haven't seen proper sunshine for about 2 to 3 months in Alberta. It's all cloudy, snow, and this. And I am thinking, Bianchi, are there ways we can Africa and Zambia? The effects the sunshine has on me, just to have some sunshine yesterday, I had to post on Facebook, the effect it has on me, there is definitely value on the sun. Not only the biological thing, the scientific, which we've been told, but there should be value to this sun, even monetary-wise, in Africa, where we have it abundantly, and we don't even care for it. Titus, am I making sense?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. If you don't live here, Nathan, where I live, what I'm saying might not make a lot of sense. I might not even explain what I'm trying to say. This is just a brief before we go into a lot of stories which we have for today. It doesn't make a lot of sense. My question, Titus, is how can we make our sunshine of value in Zambia?
Solar system. That's how we can do it.
Okay. Bianchi,
I know you are just trying to avoid using the word tourism. Okay. The best thing to do is our people responsible for marketing the sun. Okay. To use your expression. They should target markets, Bianchi, like where Roger lives. Put a lot of adverts out there about the beautiful sun that we have in Zambia and what periods of the year, the months, like you're talking about, 2 months without the sun. That's a long time. And, you know, most people can get away and go to Zambia. Let's publicize Bangweulu, Kalambo Falls, and, you know, all those places.
That.
Of course, you know, I didn't say Livingstone deliberately because that's the obvious one.
Yeah. Bianchi, throw in your weight. You are usually the magician on this stage. You bring things we don't think of.
Well, what is it you're saying? You saying sanctions? Sanctions?
No, sunshine, the sun. The sun sunshine from, yeah. You know, we haven't seen the sun here in Alberta for 2 months.
I put it like this, man. It's not too good to live in the white man's country too long.
Like you said, he's a magician.
I told you. He has his own way of expressing things. He puts it just as it is. keep going, Bianchi. Keep going.
That's all I can tell you. You're going to start changing, man. They won't recognize you when you get back home. Stay there a little while longer and see.
Now, the surprising thing, Bianchi, to follow your line of thought there, they themselves, as Nathan is saying, they don't like it. They don't like this weather. I can tell you, they don't like it. It is so depressing. And I'm going to give you examples of how this affects, I think, human living. From my workplace to my house, the drive is about 30 minutes to 25 minutes or so. And when the weather is gloomy, I will drive. if you can cross one mic here. We have, yeah, good, thank you. I drive Bianchi about 25 minutes or 30 minutes to my workplace. And when the weather is bad, that is usually my goal, is to get home, get from my workplace to get home. Yesterday it was 9 degrees. That would be around the 60 Fahrenheit in the United States, and a lot of sunshine. I couldn't drive straight to home. I was thinking, where can I go? Where can I go next? So I had to go to Tim Hortons. I don't know. Tim Hortons is huge in America. Here it's Tim Hortons. You have Starbucks in the United States. Tim Hortons is huge. I had to go Tim Hortons, grab a very big cup of tea and some donuts, a lot of music in my vehicle. I'm happy, you know, things like that. In a bad day, in a weather bad day, my thinking is not even good. I come home, I just want to go to bed and sleep. I don't want to do anything else. Yesterday, I had to sit on the computer, do a lot of things I've been thinking of doing, just because there is a lot of sunshine. And on average, a lot of people here in Canada, in Western Canada, are affected that way.
Well, even on a good sunny day, the sun is not as good as it is in Zambia. You probably don't have to wear sunglasses in Zambia because the sun is directly overhead. But in those countries, you have to wear sunglasses because it's low on the horizon and hitting you in your eyes. And
that's
to be
right.
Without sunshine, that's from coming from a country where you are used to it, you know, I think one of the most horrible and inhumane things that I've witnessed, and there's many, is when you take Africans off of the equator and put them up in a Minnesota or North Dakota. So, no, that can cause psychological effects. Roger, we have been noticing the drag in your voice here lately.
It's being caused by lack of sunshine. through you listen to, I think to what Bianchi is saying and what you said, I am thinking the amount of depression. One kid told me, I went to put in gas in a vehicle one time, in a cold winter day. He was talking about weed, marijuana. Young kid. I don't know how the discussion started, me and my talking. So this kid talked, oh, you don't know Canada is known for two things. Western Canada, at least, is known for two things. Weed, marijuana, and the weather, the bad weather. Two things. Others, you may only know Canada from the outside where you are. But the weather. But here they know it for two things, the weather and weed. And mostly weed is associated with the weather, depression. A lot of people have depression issues here where we are. And it is caused by the weather, mostly caused by the weather. And so they go to smoking weed. That way it helps those depressing moments which they have to feel much better than they do. And therefore, my thinking is like, I think there can be something we should be doing, as Nathan put it, to market our sunshine. It is, people may not know the value of sunshine in Africa. Sunshine is very, very, very valuable, Nathan. Very, very valuable. If there is something, I've told even my wife, there's something which will send me back to Africa, it is the weather. I think that's something we speak here, not to see the sunshine the way we do. I remember in Kana East, 5 o'clock, you are coming from school, you go drop your book bags, Nathan, in Mufulira, everywhere. You are outside, you go stand in the corner, everyone comes at that corner, you are talking. Those are some of the things you cannot do here. Part of it is the weather. Everyone is heading home to go hide themselves.
Why do you think I live in Texas? It's the closest to African weather. Question, Roger, is marijuana legal in Canada?
It is not legal in inverted commas. One, if they find just a small piece, you know, you have made a small piece, you cannot be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, you are not going to sell. But if it is large quantities, you presume that it's for trade, then you can be arrested for.
You can be arrested, okay.
For
it. So it's here and there.
In British Columbia, I think there is a law which they have passed for medical marijuana. They are pushing the same law over here. And to the extent that people are just saying, why don't you just allow people to be having... It is... You'll be surprised, Nathan. People who are dealing with marijuana are grade 9, as little as grade 9, are on marijuana. Smoking.
Well, at least we know about the famous mayor now who has gone quiet.
Rob Ford is a Canadian
mayor.
Yeah.
Now, here is some information I know about us marketing the Sun Roger. I remember a friend of mine used to work for, it's called Zawa, Z-A-W-F, for those. Zambia Wildlife Association, something like that. He was telling me that what Zawa used to do, Pianki, is they used to come to the southern states, like in places where I know they used to do this in Arizona a lot. Come and they were marketing like hunting season in Zambia. You know, big wildlife and stuff like that, big cats. That's really big, I understand. And I used to get a lot of rich folk go out there and do some hunting for big cats. But the reason I'm raising that point is that I think we need to do, the tourism board, they said they had put some commercials on CNN to market Zambia. I don't know. I never saw one. I don't know where, maybe... I'm saying that what we need to do to market our sunshine is to do targeted marketing, okay? Not just throw it out there. Like Bianchi has said, you know, to market the sun, go to the northern states, Chicago, Illinois, Minnesota, which are the ones up there, the Dakotas, and all those places. Market the sun. And I mean, especially in Canada, do it a lot. And then you'll be like, you guys, whilst Roger is not having the sun for 2-3 months, you can get out of Canada and come to Zambia and enjoy the sun. Here are the packages. You know what I'm saying? You give them the packages and stuff like that. If you go to the Zambian embassy or the tourism board in the Canadian office or the United States market office, they'll give you such a package, blah, blah, blah. You know, like what they do in the department or what, you know, in the stores here, Kroger, Walmart, everybody. They have those deals for a particular time. So when you know, Pianki, that it's terrible weather in this state, in this part of the country, tell them that for a family of four, Roger, it will cost you so much to stay at Bangweulu Lodge, that house I'm trying to remember that memorial house that is in Chinsali somewhere there. You know, that thing that was built by one of these colonial guys. Tell them a family of four, it will cost you so much. A family of six, it will cost you so much. It's more like buy one, get one free. You know what I'm saying? Something like that.
Yes.
We can market our sunshine in that way, Pianki.
Oh, yes, that works fine. I know a friend of mine who's been taking groups of African American to Egypt for 32 years, like that, 15 days. Right now, it's up to about $3,500, but that includes the international flight, all hotel accommodations, meals, except for beverages, and tour sites, museum tickets, and everything. That's real good. I mean, yes, that's very viable, and I would target groups churches and so forth and have tours, last 10 days, 15 days, and go to different sites, and you get the hotel markets going on, and I mean, it would be a wonderful thing that you can do.
Yeah. Israel Kenya Lodja make a lot of money from this.
Yeah, yes, yes. In that line of thought, Nathan, we may have the sunshine. Actually, this is where our thinking, my confused thinking. We may just have the sunshine. Now, what are the other things which we will need to come with the sunshine, which we will need to support that package, meaning how prepared are we, our hotels are? If I took people to Bangweulu, do I have a place where I can put in? As a country, as we speak of these nations, you know, we are looking at a lot of places which are being transformed. India is one of them, which has been transformed by its diaspora. Africa, to a greater extent, is beginning to experience that. We are going to take our experiences. When I go back to Zambia, I'm going to tell people the significance, the value of sunshine, as they've never heard of it. You know, they just wake up in the morning, throw themselves in a small boot, pata-pata, go on the road. They don't even think about it. I'm going to take that story. Having taken that story, there should be infrastructure to support the sun. I've been to Zambia, to Bangweulu. I was sleeping in this small house, Nathan. I was eaten by mosquitoes. You cannot be for a good 3-4 days. You know, it is
the mosquitoes,
right there.
The mosquitoes,
the mosquitoes were
part of the package.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how do we begin our transitioning this package? What should this package? Zebron, good morning. Okay, I don't know if it is. This number is 913 plus four numbers 2H2. 2H2. Good morning. Yes? Ms. Lucas. Good morning, Ms. Lucas.
Good morning, Roger. How are you?
Not too bad. My good friend, what is the way? How are you?
Good morning.
How is Pennsylvania where you are?
Oh, it's raining this morning, but, you know, we're looking forward to warm weather.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, we are talking sunshine today, actually. We are talking sunshine. Let me try this number again. 913, last four numbers, 2282. Morning. Okay. We'll continue our discussion. So, Nathan, our infrastructure, yes, we have the primary commodity, which is the sun, which we are talking about. With that comes a lot of things which we may need to put in.
Yes, apparently, what I know and what I've seen is not very long ago I was looking at pictures of some very, very luxury or very nice lodge in Bangweulu. I can be corrected. The grass, the surroundings were very good. Roger, there is some infrastructure in place to some extent. I like the point you are bringing across or the argument of saying, we may do the marketing, but can we provide the facilities these families might be looking for, considering their standard of lifestyle from here? Okay? But what we need to do is we need to be smart about it, Tianki, to tell them, look, you are going into natural habitats, okay? And we are going to give you the best that the natural habitat can give you. The infrastructure is there. One, it needs to be promoted. We need to put things on online and say, this is how this Bangweulu Lodge looks like. And this, we need to engage. These are things we need to do, engage the chanters, the Limbo Lodge guys. I don't know who are the people doing, the groups or whatever people are doing, the tourism stuff in the northern zone, as they call it. The southern zone, the Livingston area, is covered, okay? Those guys, they have brought it together and everything. But we need to talk about Mfuwe. You remember where KK used to go for a working lodge and all those places there? I'm trying to remember the names. Beautiful places. Presidential standards, Roger. We need to publicize these things. The infrastructure is there. We just need to, of course, more needs to be done. But I think we can handle it. We can handle it. It's just a matter of throwing the information there and, that place is beautiful. You just said you went to Zamfia. I'm told Zamfia has got some of the best beaches in the world. Isn't that so?
Best. You know, we are not talking about one of the beaches when you go to Ocean City, Maryland, and United States. We used to go there a lot of times. The water is dirty, you know. But people, what can they do? We were throwing ourselves in that dirty water. And then I reflect back on the water from Bangweulu in Zamfia, Bangweulu. The sand, you can see through the water, Nathan, through that sand, crystal clear, nice, although cold.
I know.
But it was very, very nice sand. If that area, someone with money could develop that area with some nice real estate, for some reason, I don't know, my mind also tells me, I should go and build a rehab center there. Send all the celebrities to recover there. I don't know why I think like that. But it's a nice place.
But we wanted to say something.
No, man, listen, I just joined in and, I will contribute. Go ahead.
Okay, no, that was... That was my thought. I really thought about this yesterday as I was explaining to the owner. We haven't seen good sunshine here in Canada for close to 2 months. Has only been snow, cloud cover, gloomy days where my drive always is to speed home, go lock up myself in the house, sit on the couch, sleep, look forward to the next day. When there's sunshine, I want to go around town now. I'm thinking of people I can go and visit. I'm thinking we do not use our sunshine properly in Africa and in Zambia. It should make us to do things that people here cannot do. Maybe this is where us as members of the diaspora should be looking one day to develop our nation. Okay, Nathan mentioned KK. KK turns 90 years old on the 28th of this month. He's going to be 90 years old.
Yes, and Roger, that's a good point you bring, because next week on my show, I'm going to have the people organizing KK's 90th birthday celebration. They're going to be talking to us about the things that, actually, it started on 1st April. It's going to be a 28-day celebration. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It started on 1st April. They're going to do a 28-day celebration up to the birthday.
That's so cool. It has started already?
Yes, 1st April. They kicked it off.
Wow. Ms. Lucas, I don't know if you have any thought on this. What does this really mean for the father of our nation? A very rare breed in Africa, a human being to reach in Zambia 90 years. Maybe they are there in the villages, but it's very, very rare. What would be the significance of this, Ms. Lucas?
I hope you can hear me. I keep getting this background feedback, but I hope you can hear me okay. I think it's good.
That's right.
Okay, great. I think it's good. We do need to celebrate our elders. We need to celebrate our leaders, you know. 90th birthday is a big deal in Zambia. When we look at, when we go online and we read our, what do we call this?
Life expectancy rate.
We are saying that 37.5 for women, 37 for men. That's 37 years. So this is good. It's a great. We have a generation that has been completely wiped out, and there are certain people who are not living past that age. So 90 years old is a big deal. When I was young, I used to think Dr. Kaunda was 90 years old. Every time we celebrated his birthday on TV, I thought he turned 90. You know, when you're young, you just feel like older people are 100 years old, you know. But I think it's good. We need to do that more often. So I like the idea of celebrating 28 days. That's good.
So 28 days celebration. In that celebration, Nathan, as we prepare for that discussion, it will be a very nice discussion. I look forward to it. The father of the nation is 90 years. What are some of the questions we should be as we reflect on the 90 years of KK? What are some of the segments of his life should the Zambians be celebrating?
That's a very big question, Roger, for a small man like me. I think, of course, we can't avoid but become historical. I don't know whether you saw. By the way, everybody, there is a page for President Kaunda on Facebook. You can like it and follow the events that are going there.
I like that.
They are posting a lot of things there. Do you know what happened during the week? I don't know whether you saw this, everybody on the line and listening. Eventually, somebody, and it's amazing how this ended up in America. You know, the original manuscript for the book that Dr. Kaunda wrote, Zambia Shall Be Free, on the occasion of marking to kick off the celebration of 90 years, an American gentleman flew into Zambia. I think, I don't know where some of Dr. Kaunda's stuff is in America, in a storage place, and some of the historical stuff from the days when they were fighting for independence. He was handed Pianki Vachsebwe, Matilda. Dr. Kaunda was handed back the original manuscript for his book, Zambia Shall Be Saved. That's a milestone, Roger. It was so. If you want to follow what is happening about the celebrations and everything, you have to go and like Dr. Kaunda's page, President. I think it's President Kenneth Kaunda, something like that. Now, what are the questions that we should be looking at? Of course, the independence struggle, and of course, the independence struggle, and that's a big one on itself. One of the things that I would really like to discuss with Dr. Kaunda Roger is the challenges of his early leadership. Number one, the things that, you know, I want us to begin to dig our history, Lenshina issue. Number two, Adamson Mushara. I know some people listening to this don't even know what I'm talking about. Sorry. I would like him to discuss those things. It's very easy for us to highlight the things that we normally find it easy to discuss, positive things, the victories, the achievements, the questions I would ask him. And by the way, in preparation for next week's discussion, the guys that are doing Dr. Kaunda's 90th birthday celebration who are going to be on the show next Saturday, I'm working on trying to see, Roger, if KK can just come on for 5 minutes, the diaspora gets an opportunity to sing happy birthday to him.
That's a great idea. Miss Lucas and the team. Miss Lucas and the team in Atlanta. I think Nathan those organizing, maybe we should touch with them. I don't know if they the running website, so that members of the diaspora, we can buy a small gift for this man. Relating to my question of 90 years and what it means, Zambia today is one of the most peaceful countries, I think, in Africa. From the day we got our independence, we have never seen the kind of confusion which is found in other countries, which in most cases, and that's my starting point when I talk to people about Zambia. You know, most questions, most people, when you talk to them, the next question, where you come from, is Zambia. Do you have problems there? That's the next question. That's all they know about Africa. And my answer to them always, I say to them, Zambia is the only, maybe after one of the few countries, I say, one of the few countries that has never experienced a kind of conflict people are used to seeing on TV. Never. This is attributed, Nathan, to this great man. From the time of independence, to me, that's just a small part of it. It is what he did after independence. It's what KKK did after independence. It has made us what we are. When we look at our friends who come from Zimbabwe, even here in the diaspora, the one tribe from the other tribe, they will never talk to each other. When we look at our friends who come from Kenya, from the Luo and those who speak the other language, even in the diaspora, they will never talk to each other. KK said to us, you are one nation. Regardless of the language you speak, the tribe you come from, you are one nation. When we come here in diaspora, all I want to see, all I want to hear is you are a Zambian. It ends there. What tribe you come from, it matters less. This is what this great man did to Zambia. And today, no one can easily start a civil war based on tribe. It will never happen. So this man, really, Nathan, we really need to honor him for the great things he has done for this great nation.
That's true. I concur with you, Roger. You've put it better than what I'm going to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So,
you know,
go ahead.
In addition to what Nathan was saying, you know, what kind of things would we, questions would we want to ask Dr. Kaunda? What would we want to find out about our history? I did share with Nathan on the side as he told me he was preparing this segment. You know, we only know a good thing after it's gone. And we don't want to start discovering or rediscovering after, you know, his passing. There are a lot of things that Dr. Kaunda has to share. I'm making this comment in reference to some of the comments I've seen on Facebook where Dr. Kaunda was on BBC, and there are some people who thought, you know, with his age, he's become senile. But in those comments, words that he's saying out there, that seem so distant, so far away. There's so much value. There's so much we can learn from. There's so much we can understand from the struggles. We were not there, but he is giving us a piece of that, giving us a picture of what they had experienced. You know, a little bit of that was seen on Mandela's funeral when he spoke about certain things, you know, concerning the Boers and so on. It's for those who were part of that history or is still fresh in their mind, it makes you appreciate what they had gone through. For those who are young, the millennial generation, the Y generation, they don't understand that and they don't appreciate that. But I think it's good that we take it all in, you know. We shouldn't dismiss it and say he's being seen. There's so much wisdom when a person sounds like, it sounds like they're confused and so on, But later on, when you reflect, you say, wow, I should have paid attention to what that person was saying when they were speaking.
Bianchi, those points raised by Ms. Lucas here are very critical to any society. We find in most, especially Africa, we don't pay attention to our history, our recording of history, our archives and stuff. How have Americans, how do you do it to make sure that the history, the Abraham Lincoln of this world, they sound like he was a president some 6 years ago. You may never know this man was president some 300 years as America is old. How can we do it? Nathan and Ms. Lucas is saying, we need to preserve our history. And some of the people who can help preserve this, it is the president, like President Kaunda.
Well, all history is a current event. The things that have happened 5 minutes ago, 5 hours, 5 days, 5 years ago will determine what would happen 5 minutes from now, 5 hours from now, 5 days, and 5 years from now. And it's very important that you instill that in your young people. You know, the thing that I like is when you mentioned that there will never be any civil conflicts based on tribes. The quilt, as large as it is, the quilt is the nation, and each patch that makes up the quilt is each individual tribe, each individual ethnic group, and they all are as important as each other because they make up the nation. And that should be instilled in your children. It should be mandatory. There should be many museums around Zambia located in different areas, and the contents of one should travel to the other, and the contents of the other should travel to another. And it goes around in a circle. That way, the people in one area of Zambia who doesn't have an opportunity to go to another area of Zambia, at least they can be exposed to the history of those areas. So, yes, it's very important. It's mandatory here in the United States, whether you know it or not, subconsciously, it's mandatory. In Philadelphia, it's mandatory that you teach the Holocaust, even though it did not happen on these shores. It's sometimes political, a lot of times it's social. But however it is, it must be implemented.
Wow. Wow. I like that. Our history should be mandatory. Should be taught as mandatory. Listening to Obama speak the other time to young Europeans, don't forget what others did for you to survive what Hitler was bringing. And today you want to blame everything which can be wrong here in Europe on immigrants. But, well, immigrants were part of your success here in Europe. Don't forget that. Even our young children, Ms. Lucas, you pointed to it, even our young children, they may forget our history, what we are talking about here, that as a nation, tribe is not part of our discussion in terms of dividing us, but rather a tribe is just something recognizes as a single unit in Zambia. So history, as Bianchi is saying here, should be mandatory and be taught. But Nathan, we have a country like Zambia. Let's talk about the United States. They have the money to put aside, to probably build museums, to probably promote their history. How do we reorganize our resources? How do we, where do we find the resources to help us preserve our history when our schools themselves, where children are supposed to be sitting, are in you know, in pieces, so to say. Nathan can talk about it and then let's say.
Okay. One of the things Roger was thinking we could do as a way to respond to your answer is like they have in the United States. I don't know whether they do it in Canada as well, where the presidential libraries. You know, all former presidents, they build this place for them where they put all their records, their personal history, their leader, the time of their presidency. Wouldn't it be exciting to do a first thing like that in Zambia for Dr. Kaunda? That would be a milestone. Now, you see, the thing is, what most people don't realize is most of these things are not done using taxpayers' money, or the government doesn't even put in a penny or a ngwe. We can do that by simply finding funding or sponsorship to do something, a project like that. It can be done. It can be done. All we just need to do is get a few people with powerful connections and resourceful in their thinking and abilities, and we can come up with a project like that and do something for Dr. Kaunda, build a presidential museum for him. That's just
absolutely
my thinking.
Right, Nathan. You know, when we look at these national history archives for, you know, the museums or even the Smithsonian, find that people donate some of the pieces of material. You know, I'm sure there's a lot more that goes to it than just the mere donation, but it starts like that. And I think it starts off as a non-profit or some kind of a venture. It might start off with a house. You know, somebody saying this house is dedicated to this. Before you know it, someone donates a building, an office space or something like that. And over time, it becomes a campaign and you build something. And not just on you start a trip, you know. I think that it can be done.
Well, you can do it. You have natural resources in the ground. Print up the money based on that, build a museum, then your foreign tourists that come to visit the new museum, charge them a fee to pay back the loan. That's the way we do it here in the United States. You just don't see it. Those monies that contribute to Bush's library, those monies contribute by way of tax deductions. Taxpayers ultimately do pay for it. But you can do the same thing in Zambia. Use Zambian contractors, use Zambian resources, use Zambian this, that, and the other, whereas the kwacha that is printed up will be spent there in the country. It doesn't have to leave the country and go up against other currencies. It's a loan. Pay it back. And require that tourist groups that are coming to Zambia, that has to be on their agenda. And out of their fee, and the tourists, a portion goes towards supporting that museum, paying that loan off.
That's good.
Very interesting. Did you have anything to... go ahead.
Yes, sir, Roger. As we celebrate KK's 90th birthday, and I'm glad that God has given him a long life and that he's still alive. And at the same time, he leaves a challenge on us Zambians, looking at his life and impact he left on us. What can we learn from him? And then for us to add on how we treat our leaders. You know, KK became a leader at a very, very young age. And in my own thinking, sometimes when I look at KK, and especially when I'm looking at where did he draw the wisdom to lead the country and where did he get the resources, was his advisors, and Roger and everyone else, Vanessa and Mr. Machuda, you know, coming to this country, you see how much, the universities, what they contribute to develop a leader. Like I don't know if you guys have seen King's speech. When I went to watch King's speech and when I came out and I said the Western countries have come from long, long, long way of how to lead their people. You know, the king was an impairment. He had an impairment in his speech, but the things he went through, the doctors who tried to help him. You know, but not only that, but the things they did to lead their people and to send a message to their people, to make sure that they gather their people and to make sure they become victorious, you know. If you look at the King's speech, I mean, I can't say it on the air right now. But if you look at the movie itself, they came from a long way how to lead their people and how to present. So when I look at KK and I says where, I mean, one part of group that gave him advice how to, because you can't, one person just can't do it, you know. So we have to learn from one person. He can't just do it, one person. But there's people behind, you know, and when we look at KK, because we have to look at KK when he was a president, what kind of things he did before he became a leader, and where did draw all his wisdom, and why he is today, for us to leave a place for our young generation when they become a leader, not only thinking only me I can do it, but as a group, you know what. So this is a good thing because a man has living, you know, when he was a president and when he's not a president, what kind of life, you know. So it's a good thing for us to start, Roger. And again, I just want to congratulate you the way you come up with things, you know, and. You know, that's all I can say right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no,
right,
I just thank you.
And I'm looking forward, you know, and this is 50th independence celebration. To be honest with me, for me, it's a very, I'm going to be honest, you know, because it's a very, I don't know if I should celebrate or not. Because one thing, too, as, you know, we are different tribes in Zambia. And especially in my country, you know, when you're growing up in Kwai, Mkwai, when every time someone said, you have to say Mkwai for you to get somewhere, you know. Even if you don't like the person, the other person, you just have to say Mkwai, you know. And I'm coming against with Mkwai. I mean, it's a good thing, but I'm coming against Mkwai because it destroys people. Development the way myself I think, you know, because of where we are and how you know you're supposed to bring up someone to have their own thinking and their own you know just to have freedom, you know.
Okay.
This is independence compared to the colonialism and when we were led by the British and when we got independence, when those ladies they were by wearing T-shirts they get arrested, and if that's what we fought for, you know, it's a very disturbing for me.
Next week, what's the way I may bring that discussion, celebrating our 50th anniversary. Should we celebrate it or should we be stay away from it? Be sad.
Roger, sorry to catch you. Roger, sorry to catch you. Because when you said about when those guys were arrested, and if the government they want us to be free, maybe nobody should go celebrate the independence. You know, only the officials. That way they think, okay, this is how independence should be. You know, because. If you just wear a T-shirt that says we need the Constitution and they arrest you, you know, maybe independence shouldn't be for civilians.
I like
maybe
that.
Just for the government
officials. I like
you know, that. Everyone
I like
should
that.
Stay home,
right,
just the government officials should go.
Yes. So should we protest our independence or not? I don't know. Titus, we are not going to independence. That is a discussion for next week. But what were your thoughts on KK's birthday, Titus?
Generally, I think for KK, it's a good idea that people are saying. I think one should engage, like you said, that some of these things are supported not by taxpayers' monies, but you can also create a break. These companies that are being charged these taxes and stuff, you can create a break if somebody donate for specific things. How do people benefit? Because those are some of the things that help out here in terms of if you donate something to a charitable or something, there's a way you write off. So people here that have money have choices. These people Well, every rich person has a foundation. Carol Kay has one, Mandela had one, all these movie actors, where if you donate something to a charitable organization, you're doing the same thing. But you'd rather do that because of the feedback you're getting. Maybe from your taxes you can have a break of some kind. That's what empowers you to, instead of just still giving the money as tax to the government, if they give you a break that you donated to Kaunda's whatever they're doing, then you have some kind of a way that you're benefiting. Because that's something that instead of the government, if you don't believe the government is doing something good for you, at least they still give you a break for something you're going to feel from your heart that you're doing something good. For either you're going to honor KK because you feel he did something for you before. Mm-hmm. It's not only KK. There's a lot of people. Me, I've been in the house for who's this Gray Zulu. I had a chance to sit with him in his own house in Makene. And he was telling me, you know, the last time we talked about his benefits and stuff like that, he was a party thing. It was not really the government. It was a party and this government. And they couldn't give him. You remember he came to the show and was pleading with us to, you know. But those are people that, you remember one time Kavindera donated a Volvo to Gray Zulu. Those kind of gestures are things that an individual does. But what does that individual have in return? Yes, it's a good gesture, but give the people a chance. There are people that are doing business in Zambia. If you give them a break, maybe if they do that and they can get a duty-free car because they did some cause that the government can register that this is a good cause. So then you give them a break. Give them a certificate where they bring something that from abroad they get tax credit because they did something that the government can recognize is a good thing. There goes the situation where you don't have the money, but you give a leverage. What pain would it give you if you give a Zambian bringing a car duty-free because he built half of Kaunda's library? Nobody loses.
Well, that is, I really like what you are saying, Tiger.
So this is what
I like
have
what
to tell
I don't
some
what
of these
Bianchi,
people.
What Bianchi has suggested here about building the museums and stuff, I think one area of taxes is one thing we don't use very well in Zambia. Say for the mining companies, you know, we challenge them if they can help build some of these museums, some of the schools. They'll have a big tax break to come to their way. I think these are some of the things we together are suggesting to the people. We can really use this mechanism using taxes to promote our nation. So
and Roger,
thank you,
also just to add up, Roger. Can I just finish up? Just to add up.
Yes.
You cannot leave Kaunda's kids out. If you look at Martin Luther King, you will find that Coretta, the late wife, was spearheading something that was for the husband, the late husband, and the children, you always find them honored or something like that. Something that has to do with Martin Luther King, there's no way the four people that are doing stuff. So before you start doing anything of Kaunda's, you got to recognize there's this Panji, there's Kambaragi. Some of these people don't know. Kambaragi is a full pilot right now as I'm talking to you. That's a milestone on its own. If you know, there's always a history of somebody being popular and what are the children doing. There's always, you know, sometimes they contrast stuff of the child is doing some wrong thing. The father was, if the pastor, you find the children are doing wrong thing and people are watching. But we don't recognize people that have gone way far steps. We are looking for an airline. Kambaragi is a pilot. If you guys don't know, that's Kaunda's son. It will never be talked. You will never know. It's on Facebook. Some of the pictures of late Bet Kaunda. Look at my page. Go. You find Kambaragi on the wall. Look at some of the history pictures that these guys have. You will be surprised. And that is what you need, even in this Kaunda,
you know, library and stuff like that. You can get it not from Kaunda. You can get it from Panje and Kambaragi and all these guys. It's all full up. It's there.
Okay. It is a point, I think, well taken. Point well taken. I've seen it. I don't know if Bianchi can agree with me. Martin Luther King also, his children, like you are saying, Titus, they don't seem to carry a lot of weight as their father did. I think the problem being, when you are compared, this is your son, you know, they begin to compare you. You should be doing what your father did. And if you are not able to match what your father did, then you begin to be looked at even much lower. From what I have seen, the children, what they are demanding for their father's treasure, for their father's trophy sometimes, how they want to enrich themselves because of their dad, that, I think, of a lot of people, Bianchi. Have you seen this in regards to Martin Luther King and his children?
Well, yes, I have seen that, and, you know, there's a lot of reasons behind that. But, you know, we all have heroes and sheroes in our family. It's only when they reach a national level is that when they have such light shine upon them. And then when you produce that type of a hero, it's very difficult for a family to keep that hero, even after he or she is gone, in a state of prominence. That's where a society, i.e. a nation, has to come forward. And because he or she was not just a hero for the family, he or she had extended their lives to the nation, the greater society. Oh, yeah. And at that point in time, the nation, the greater society, should be thankful for that and come forth and show due respect in order to make sure that that name never dies.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. That was our first segment. I didn't intend to look at Dr. Kaunda's birthday that long, but we're going to go into some series of 10 minutes, very, very quick ones. So some responses so that we can see how we can make some progress on some of the issues, things which are happening world over. We continue to think of our brethren in Malaysia Airlines, those who disappeared. A lot of questions are being asked up to today. How can we lose almost 300 people just like that? They go missing. It is a thought, every one of us, if you thought about it, doesn't really make sense. How we can just, 300 people, humankind, we accept death, but we want to see our loved ones have died, and we make them rest in. A conflict in Ukraine continues. That is Bianchi's favorite president, Putin. We disorganizing world over. A lot of us don't agree. A 21st century of doing things, Bianchi, not by tanks. I think it is by sitting the way we do every Saturday morning, discuss and change ideas. How can we change from one place to another? How can we improve one thing to another, using tanks, Bianchi? I am not sure it is the first 21st century of a way of doing things.
Well, the Monroe Doctrine is not the best way to do things either.
Okay.
If you ask Cuba, if you ask Jamaica, if you ask the Caribbean countries about their status quo today, they would say that if given an opportunity, they wouldn't have went that route. So, that's a different. We would never use tanks. I'm just a poor Tonga man. Why would you use a tank against me?
I agree with that. Let's talk about the death sentence in India, those who have been convicted of raping women, there have been mass, what do they call it, gang rape. They are being convicted to death sentence in Titus. Why don't you begin this? Does this really make sense for a country to sentence? We know these people, what they are doing is they're bad, bad stuff. No, these are bad, 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 bad stuff. But is a death sentence for someone who rapes a woman the best way for them? Is this the best way we can deliver justice to these people?
I don't know, but my reasoning is, again, when you look at the other side, you can probably use the same people to educate on that very subject, maybe for their life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing, but
mm-hmm.
It's all about making sure that you're in both corners. The people that have the victims that were raped, what would make them comfortable? At the same time, maybe if they can believe that these guys are sentenced to maybe life of educating people about
very quickly,
it's all about
other
people where they don't feel like justice was not done. So maybe
there's a broader discussion I wanted to bring. I want to bring today. I invited Dr. Patrick. I haven't seen him come. We will look at this other stuff. Miss Lucas, what is your opinion on this? Is death sentence the best way to send someone who rapes a woman to... is this the best justice? What do you think?
You know, it's a very, very sensitive issue. When a woman is violated, even just any person, man, woman, a lot tears up, a lot happens. You know, you affect that person mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, you know, certain dignity is taken away. You affect that person's life, productivity of life. You know, they might be scared to do anything from then on. Probably prevents them from getting married or have a strong hatred towards men or towards the person who did that. You know, psychological issues come up. Person can become abusive to other people, can become violent and so on, or lead to suicide. So this is just the surface of what happens when what can possibly happen to a person who has been raped. Now, the person who, the offender, they can't even imagine why the person did that. That person has damaged that innocent woman's life. So they can go to jail for a period or however long, come back. Who knows if this will stop? Who knows if they are rehabilitated in the jail? Now, death sentence, you know, taking a life, I don't know. I feel the punishment should be strong, should be big, but death sentence is iffy. The only thing I can say death sentence should apply is when another life is taken. But the person, the woman who's been raped, wants justice, wants, you know, something to be done. Because that person becomes fearful. You know, if this person comes out of jail, what happens? You know, it really destroys that person's life. You can't. I don't know. I'm not finding the right words to express this feeling or the emotion I'm trying to express here. It really affects a person's lifestyle, and that's not fair that one person took it away from them, but to demand death. I'm on the fence on that. You know, some rapes are very
violent.
You know,
those two things are not reconciling. I agree with you. Bianchi, what is your say? In India, they have this law. Those who are caught in rape, I don't know if it's just gang rape or what. So far, we have about five of them who did gang rape. They were on BBC yesterday, and they are being sentenced to death. Is this the right way?
Well, that's society. That's the way they look at that crime. I think that they have a right to set their own stipulations. You know, some countries, they cut off your hand when you steal, so you don't have much stealing.
But
Mr. Lucas said, you know, also for the judges, you know, when rape victims comes to them, you know, and they explain, then you look at the young men and the way the young men too, because the way they act, like if nothing happens, or they can say, oh, just go on with life, man. Why you complain? Look at some, you know, they don't know what the damage they're causing. If someone is repentant or they did it in a way, you know, it looks like, oh, man, I'm sorry, I didn't know what I was doing. But if someone is bragging, you know, then the judges have to come up with some way of, you know, the victims, they're facing all the complaints from the victim, and they see the crime, the way the young man just goes about it. And just like Mr. Luca said, you know, the rape, the woman. And Roger, you and I, we talked about some corruption, you know, and sometimes some of us, our lives have been affected by the way the police treat us without, you didn't do anything. And the way someone acted, you go and says, why, you ask yourself, you know, why. But somebody who says, man, go on with life, so, but if you become a judge, then you said, man, you know, you have to make sure that person pays for the crime.
Okay. Well said. Like Ms. Lucas has been saying here, in my view, yes, the rape is horrible. Listening to Ms. Lucas, my body was even moving. You know, as a man, probably we cannot even tell the effect of rape. But those who are raped. But for women, I've seen explanations like what Ms. Lucas was saying. Women become fearful. They don't want to leave the house anymore. You know, some go into depression. They go to undergo. Having said that, to go take another life because they are the same like our friends in Indians because of pressure from their population. I'm not sure. I'm supportive of that. Dr. Patrick has come, and I have a lot of. My brother Bianchi usually is on the other side of the discussion, so Dr. Patrick will really help me to be on my side here. We have 45 minutes. We should cover what we need to cover. A lot of stories. Let me just say good morning, Dr. Patrick.
Good morning, my brother. Good morning.
Yes, how is North Carolina?
Wonderful. Hot. 70 degrees.
I can hear you.
Wonderful.
In our first hour, we were discussing sunshine, which we are having here for the past 2 days, Dr. Patrick. Sunshine.
Fantastic.
In Alberta. We haven't seen sun for almost 2 months. No sun. It comes in clouds, filled with snow, filled with cold. But for yesterday, even today, I can look outside. I can just feel the warmth coming to my heart. So we were discussing how we can market the abundant sunshine we have in Africa. How we can do? Came up with some very interesting ideas. We also talked about KK turning 90. What can the diaspora do to this event? The father of the nation who has helped unite our country. The members of the diaspora, we are moving them to do something, something big, something small, but we should do something for our nation. Dr. Patrick, this week, there are some questions. I really just said Dr. Patrick will help me out on this. This week, Obamacare registered 7.1 million. And for the each time I hear some very, very good news, I want to go to Fox News so I can hear what they have to say about it. And they were all over the place, you know, they were all over the place. You can hear it. One of the topics when I was reading, Dr. Patrick, reading through what Obamacare will do, someone is suggesting the opposition Obamacare is receiving, the same opposition Brown versus the Board of Education received back then. Take us through, Dr. Patrick. What was this law about the Brown versus Board of Education? What was it? Some of us who don't understand.
Sure, I'd be more than happy to do that. We're talking about before the Brown versus the Topeka Board of Education trial and ruling. There, African Americans in the United States and people of color in the United States had to suffer the indignities of what Plessy versus Ferguson put on the table. Now, Plessy versus Ferguson said, "You are equal but separate," and which led to when you go to a bathroom, there is a bathroom for white only. There's a bathroom for colored only. You go to schools, there's a schools for whites, there are schools for blacks. You go to a hotel, blacks cannot stay in the same hotel as whites. You take public transportation. You can't, or blacks cannot take the same public transportation, and if you can, you must always sit in the rear. And if you happen to get on the bus while the bus is empty, so to speak, and then it becomes crowded, blacks have to get up and give their seats up to white individuals while they must continue to move to the back. And if there are no longer seats in the back, they have to stand while whites sit down. Now, I can go on and on with the indignities of that that condition.
What year was this, Dr. Patrick?
Plessy versus
what
Ferguson.
Are we talking about?
Yeah, the later 1800s.
Okay.
Yes, the later 1800s. Now you fast forward, the indignities suffered that go all the way up to the 50s. And this court case led by and joined by university professors at Howard University, in addition to the legal team and geniuses of Thurgood Marshall, combined together to prepare this case. Now, the case did not hinge on one particular case. It had its confluences of various cases in which the ideal case to bring to the Supreme Court was brought, which was the Brown versus the Board of Topeka Education. Now, this case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that Plessy versus Ferguson is unconstitutional, which meant that blacks and whites could attend and participate in equal facilities throughout the country, which is education, transportation, hotel accommodations throughout, and especially going to the same school. Now, this case was pivotal and historic, and based on this case, subsequent cases stand on the ruling of the Board versus Brown versus Board of Education.
What was the then? Some of us are experiencing what we see for lack of better terms, we call it Obamacare today. We see how the Republicans' reaction is in regards, you know, it's black and white. Democrats are on one side, Republicans are on the other side. Then, back then in the time, along party lines, what was the Republicans' argument and what was the Democrats' and on political lines in as regards to this case?
At that time, around Board versus Brown versus Board of Education, the roles were different. The Republicans were more in favor of the Board versus Brown versus Board of Education, and Democrats were not in favor of it. You had Dixiecrats, Democratic Dixiecrats. What changed the political sidings of Democrats, yes, and Republicans was when President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. Now, President Johnson is a Democrat, but he, yes, signed, and a Democrat from Texas, as a matter of fact. But when he signed the Civil Rights Bill, I would say 80% of the Democrats moved to the Republican Party.
But you know, also, Mr. Patrick, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
You also got to mention that black people didn't like 1954 Board of the board decision, because initially black teachers was complaining because they wasn't receiving the same type of pay that white teachers was receiving. And many blacks suffered over that. Over 30,000 lost jobs as principals, administrators throughout the country. And, you know, blacks complain about that today, that they were not wanting. See, I forget the justice. He came back and said that there should be physical integration, not just the integration of funds and resources, but there needs to be physical integration. That was what blacks did not like. Even in my city, and I can point out how that worked out to the detriment, where we had another lady by the name of Lenny Medell who complained because black schools did not have the same things that white schools had. Well, it didn't stop there. The NAACP turned it into a whole different paradigm, which ended up with busing black children out of their community into white districts. Well, white districts didn't want to go along with that. And the judge threatened, the judge here was named Hungate, he threatened that, well, if you don't come up with a plan, I would come up with a plan that you don't like. So what the white district said, well, if we take these black children, we have to have more money than what they're receiving at their home district. So if a black child is sat in a school building in the black community, will receive, say, $12,000 a year, when they went out to the white community, they receive anywhere to double to maybe 2.5 times that much. Oh, well, that sounds good, but what did that permit them to do? It permitted them to build up the infrastructure in their schools, new buildings, new swimming pools, new track and field, new athletic complexes, whereas the people in those districts did not have to bear the burden in increases in taxes. Once they had built up to the point of embarrassment, they opted out of the plan, sent the black kids back into the city, and that's still being played out today, because we don't have those type of facilities where they have them out there in their community.
Now, what Pianchi just said is 100% true. Now, what you have to look at, expand the picture, expand it just a bit, which is you have an environment, or there was an environment in which, before, when you had separate but equal, you had professional blacks, teachers, doctors, lawyers, you name it, professional blacks. And what they did was their communities, they ran and operated their communities. Now, when the city as well as the state meted out educational funds, of course the white schools received, let's say as a round number, white schools received $50,000, and the black schools received $25,000. However, the blacks in the community, the professionals, the attorneys, the representatives, they used that $25,000 to the optimum. So you had well-run schools, as poor as compared to the other schools, the white schools, but they were very good. You had entrepreneurial ownerships. They owned the stores. They owned the markets. They owned the law professors. They owned the dentistries. They were teachers receiving good money, comparatively speaking. Now, what Pianchi is saying, which I said is 100% true, what happened was when it was now no longer separate but equal, remember the politicians that were in office, the governorships, the local governorships, the state governorships, they are all Caucasian. And they were with about one or two exceptions. And what they decided to do is they said, okay, it's all equal, so everybody can go to the same school. However, I'm going to appropriate certain monies for certain communities. I'm going to gerrymander the monies for certain communities. So therefore, if a community was thriving, a black community was thriving with the $25,000 they had, now they find that they're not getting $25,000. Most of that money that went to the professors, the black professors, the teachers, and the entrepreneurs, it now went to a general pool. And those who were in charge of the general pool and divided the general pool, it went to predominantly white communities. So therefore, it's equal. There's no separate. The only thing is the child had to travel if they wanted, or the black child, if they wanted a comparable education, they had to get on the bus and travel a long distance in order to get that education. Now, monies were provided for the busing of children, but yet and still you see the disparity. And when Pianchi said to this day you can still see the same thing, you go into city environments, urban developments, you will see, and you watch the budgets of the local municipalities, you will see public school systems being not given the amount of money that they should be given. Therefore, you have deteriorating schools, you have inferior books, and the students are not trained or learned because the superior instructors are being paid higher at a different environment, different school system. So you do have the same thing, but you have to look at the politics of money. Who controls the budget?
Dr. Patrick, sorry, Brother Pianchi, sorry. I really didn't want to go this deep into this. I just wanted to understand the basis and the two sides, always Democrats and Republicans, where they were during this debate on the Brown versus the Board of Education.
Yeah, they flipped.
To help us understand today, and the main question, I want to concur what President Obama said the other day in the Rose Garden. He doesn't really understand why people should so any questionable, any normal individual, Dr. Patrick, will really not understand why these people are doing what they are doing.
Well,
people should not have health insurance.
Let me just add this, and then I'll turn it back to Pianchi, and then I'll come back in. I just want to update you on the numbers. Originally, the goal set by the Congressional Budget Office was, now remember, it's Congressional Budget Office, not President Obama. And it is it's not a partisan organization, the Congressional Budget Office. They originally set $7.1 million, then they dropped it to $6.0 million, and then on April the 1st, the announcement was that President Obama reached the $7.0 million of applicants. Now, these are private applicants. As of yesterday, April the 4th, it was reported that 3 million Medicare applicants have to be added to the 7.1 million. So the actual count for now, for this day, as of today, and still counting, is 10 million.
Okay.
Well, Roger, you just can't just stick your toe in the water. You got to put your whole body in the water to understand what's going on.
Okay.
And it has a lot to do, ultimately it has to do with money. I mean, this whole thing about raising the minimum wage, I remember when minimum wage was $2.20 an hour. And I seen posted where it was like $1.80 an hour. During that time, I bought X number of this, that, and the other. Today, minimum wage, is they're talking about $15 an hour. During this time, I bought X number of this, that, and the other. I mean, it's just a way for them to collect more taxes, for one thing, because you raise minimum wage, you're going to collect more taxes. If you have this thing with the Obamacare, if you don't get involved in it, they're going to charge you a tax. So it's very complicated. There's no difference between the two. There's little difference as any, but when you weigh it all on a scale, there's no difference between either one, Democrats or Republicans, I don't think, when it comes down to the money picture. It's just too complicated just to hit on one or two points.
Well, okay. As you know, I will disagree with Pianchi on that point.
I do disagree with you as well.
When it comes to Obamacare which Obama adopted that name, he says I like that name. The actual name is Affordable Care Act. And if you go to any state, Texas, Missouri, Mississippi, Kentucky, any state, and you ask the individual, Republican or Democrat,
yes,
walking in the street, and you ask them, do you like Obamacare? They will say, no, I don't like Obamacare. But if you ask the same person a few minutes later, do you like the Affordable Care Act, they will say, yes, that's a great, great program. It's the same thing. What the Republicans have done is tarnish the potential of the Affordable Care Act. The Republicans do not want to have an equivalence of the Affordable Care Act with Social Security, with Medicare. They don't want that, because if you go to any individual in the United States and you say we're getting rid of the Social Security, that person will be gotten rid of. If you say I'm getting rid of Medicare, that person will be gotten aware of. You can take anything, any of the senior citizens,
yes,
anyone receiving, you can take anything from them, but you better not touch their Social Security. And this is the same thing that's going to happen with Obamacare or the Affordable Care
Yes.
Act.
Yes.
It is
Yes.
a program that if you run down the litany, and this is why President Obama asked the question, he says, I don't understand it. Why do you want to deny any person health care? And you run down the litany of what Obamacare is providing to the individual. And more the success stories of the individual that finally got health care, who had never received health care, they finally have signed up to receive it. You can go to No Women Can Be Exempted for Precondition. You can go the child who at one time, they didn't have any medical insurance, but now they in college they can stay on their parents. Their health insurance plan. You can, before the Affordable Care Act, an individual that thought they had a wonderful insurance plan and their spouse went to the hospital and found that they had cancer,
they thinking they had an outstanding health insurance plan, which in actuality was a junk insurance plan, they would lose their mortgage, their house. They would lose everything in a matter of a half a year. Now they cannot or they will not worry about that happening to them. The Affordable Care Act is addressing it. Another thing, when President Bush left office, he had a prescription drug law that was passed. But there was a huge donut, and the donut meant that the people that applied for this prescription under that law would be losing a lot of money. President Obama's ACA closed that gap. They are not losing any money. As a matter of fact, they're getting money back. Yes, they're getting their money back. Now, I can go on and on about the benefits of it, but this is the bottom line. If an individual, before the act, if an individual not having any insurance ended up having to go to the hospital, they don't have any money, they don't have any coverage, so what do? They go to the emergency ward. And when they go into the emergency section of the hospital, they will be treated. However, the charges goes to the state. So any quick medical attention they receive in the emergency room, which is free, will be charged to the state. That's no longer the case. Every individual now with that personal private insurance, they don't have to worry about that. They will be covered. And the local municipality don't have to worry about where they're going to get the finances to pay for these individuals that did not have any insurance and they showed up at the emergency room. Now, one more thing. This is very important. Everyone is talking about the Medicaid extension. This is what the states, some of the states such as Louisiana, Texas, some of the states are refusing the Medicaid extension. And this is what they're doing. The state has a minimum wage cutoff. The federal government has a minimum wage cutoff, meaning the least amount you can make, you could be provided Medicare. So what happens to if the individual in Louisiana reaches a poverty limit of that municipality is $20,000? If you make less than $20,000, you get Medicaid. However, federally speaking, if you make $30,000, you're eligible. So the individuals between $20,000 and $30,000 fall through the gap. They can't get the Medicare from the state because they're making more than $20,000, and they can't get any money from the government because they're making more than $30,000. What Obamacare has done or wanted to do was close this gap. Obamacare said, you will get this money, all of this money, to close the gap. So anyone walking around that falls between this area is going to be extended. You'll be covered. So the Louisianans, the Texans, all of these individuals that are in that Medicare gap don't get the money. And they walk around without any insurance. And the only thing they had to say was, I want it to be extended.
Yeah, but in all honesty.
In Kentucky, I'll bring you in, Bianchi, as we go. In Kentucky, Dr. Patrick, where Mitch McConnell, Senate minority leader, has seen the most success in the registration of the people who have joined Obamacare or Affordable Healthcare.
360,000 people in Kentucky.
The governor,
I've joined Dr. Patrick.
Yes,
Obama.
The governor,
he's a fierce opponent of Obamacare, Dr. Patrick. How does Mitch McConnell go to the people of Kentucky and tell them, I want to abolish Obamacare? Because this they're not all Democrats. Some of them are Republicans who have registered. How does he convince these people that he's going to abolish Obamacare and still survive so is the other Republicans in other states? How do they survive, these Republicans?
Oh, it's going to be very difficult now. We're talking about 10 million people. And in Kentucky in particular, because the governor of Kentucky accepted the extension, the Medicare extension. And they were, and the individuals that were beneficiaries of the extension, that gap was closed between the state and the federal government. They are being insured. So Mitch McConnell, Rand, those senators are going to be facing a headwind that's huge. They're going to, because when they return to Kentucky and they look at the Kentuckians who are getting the ACA insurances, either Medicare expansion or private insurance, which is down, which is all throughout Kentucky now, they are going to look at the Kentuckians. And you think the Kentuckians are going to give back their affordable care insurance? I don't think so. And you'll see slowly but surely the politicians that were out against Obamacare is slowly but surely turning their wheels around. First, they say the numbers are bogus, but now they're slowly turning their wheels around to not say repeal. They're saying replace, but they don't have any replacement.
But
they're
not saying what they want to replace it with. They are not saying area code 469.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll come back to you, Dr. Patrick. Area code 469, anyone who has a point here wants to contribute to our discussion. We are staying in America today. Area code 469, last four numbers, 2572. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Namunji.
Yes, how are you? This is, what's her name now? Okay, I haven't forgotten your name, but you can say your name.
Namunji. My name is Namunji.
Namunji, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad, not
good
too
morning.
Bad. Our discussion
good
today,
morning,
I'm sure you have followed it. Yes, Dr. Patrick is okay. Yes, can
okay,
you come through?
Thank you. Yeah, sure. Can I have a question on this health care for Obama? One of my friends, her company provides insurance, but she opted not to enroll in that insurance, and she was trying to enroll on Obamacare insurance. So when she tried to enroll, what she found out, I don't know how far true that is, that her premiums were going to be high, the reason being that because her company provides insurance, but she opted out of her insurance. The Obamacare is good for people whose their company does not provide insurance at all, or they are not working. How true is that statement?
Well, you have to always look at the individual case in order to speak specifically. But in general, what the Affordable Care Act has done is it has allowed the individual the freedom to apply for health insurance. Before the Affordable Care Act, the individual was wedded to their job because the job provided the health insurance. And if they left their job, there would be no health insurance provided. So now with Obamacare, you can leave your job or you can apply for a different health insurance. Now, you have to do it between the open season, which will always be November to March. Now, for this particular individual, my best advice to this individual, and you can share this with her, is for her to find a navigator. Now, a navigator is a person that assists you to go through all of the insurance plans that are out there. The best way you can do it, you can go to healthcare.gov. You pull that up, and then you'll find out where the navigators are, and these individuals will be able to assist. Now, navigators are found in every state. Some states try to slow down or prevent navigators from helping the individual go through the plethora of systems. But I would say 90 to 95%, this individual may find a better private health insurance than what the job is offering. So just find a navigator, go on healthcare.gov, and see what happens.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Anamunji, or anyone else who want to come through here for a question or a comment, please come in. But Pierre, you had something to say here. I'm trying to stay on the politics, Bianchi. I think I understand it's all about money. I'm not sure people are interested in those details. Who is going to benefit this, going to benefit that. But that's the idea of an individual now going to have checkups. We have seen this problem in southern states where MSNBC was organizing a checkup program. Thousands and thousands of people who don't have health care, we are going for free clinics so that they can be checked out. With the Obamacare, poor people now can have a doctor where they can go. People are starting to understand what is wrong with that picture.
Well, you know, they always had, and here in my city they got comprehensive health clinics where a poor person or anybody else, rich person, can go in to them, and on a sliding scale, you pay a fee as low as $15 for a doctor visit. The problem with some of these wise governors, and I say that they're wise, is that they have heard the federal government make these promises in the past and renege on them. Yes, they're going to pay 100% of that donut cost. Then it's going to gradually decrease and decrease and decrease. But who's going to pick up the cost when they're no longer there? Now, you want me to give you some examples of things that came about where the federal government would be there for an infinite period of time to take care of? Let's look at education. You had Goals 2000. And then we had the famous No Child Left Behind. One of the things that the district said, well, you come up with these things, but where is the money to implement them? There's a term that's called unfunded legislation.
Yes. Now, follow up that, Bianchi. Whether there is money or no money, I just want you to speak to common sense. Stay away from your politics for a change. Stay away from your politics. Just basic human understanding. Should individuals be walking around without health care? What is the option?
Here in my city, you got comprehensive health centers. The reason why come when you go to the emergency room, they're required to treat you because they forego that against their taxes. Barnes Jewish Complex profit over $300-some-odd million. So guess what? They say, well, we will provide emergency treatment in our emergency rooms for people who don't have the money. That's how they were selling those things. These hidden taxes always pop up. And Justice Roberts himself said it was a tax. The courts have said that you are not entitled to your Social Security or your Medicare because guess what? It's a tax. It's not an entitlement. Yes, you get it today, but in the future, it may not be there.
So, Fida, what is the prescription?
Bianchi, look at...
I'm not saying that I don't think people should be receiving medical care. No, I don't. I'm not saying that.
That's the question.
I'm saying, how do you pay for it?
See, that's the question, and that's what we're looking at. Let's just, before you say how do you pay for it, let's just say there's a big pot of money over the outside or the other side of the rainbow. Let's just say it's out there. The baseline question is, and I know you agree with this, Bianchi, is that everybody should receive affordable health care. Everybody should be able to get that health care. Now, once we get over that loop and all the benefits that are involved in an individual getting good health care insurance, not junk insurance, good health care insurance, then we go over the expand, which is how do we pay for it. So if we all agree that every individual should get health care, then just like every individual should get Social Security, then we go over the wide divide, and that's when the politics come in. And the politics is who's going to pay for it and why are we going to pay for it. And you move into a very moral area, and the moral area is, do you want to pay for private entities making millions and millions of dollars, or do you want to pay for individuals so that they can walk around risk-free to a certain point with respect to health care?
Well, you're not going to stop the entity because insurance companies don't say, we don't know where the final number is going to be. What they're doing now is just preliminary. So what you're paying $10 for today may go up to $300, a year from now.
And you know the private insurance companies are benefiting from this. Now, the best paradigm that we can use as with respect to healthcare monies rising, going up on an annual basis, we have a prime and a great example. Look to Massachusetts. Massachusetts have health care coverage up to 92%. And they've been in the business of the private health care insurance policies 6-7 years ago. And right now we're 7 years later and Massachusetts are not complaining.
Well, Massachusetts, in all honesty, Dr. Patrick, Massachusetts is one of your highest income states in America. Now, go to the opposite and look at Arkansas and Mississippi.
No. Let's look. I just want to keep you focused on Massachusetts, on an affordable care, health care plan. They have it, and it's similar to what Obamacare is trying to do at the federal level. And when you look at Massachusetts, they are enjoying that health care plan. And remember, that health care plan was a Republican plan. And this is what Obamacare is basing our federal health care plan on. And the benefits of the individuals in Massachusetts, you can go to any individual, poor, rich, medium income, they are enjoying their health care plan. So if we need an example, let's look at Massachusetts and project what's going to happen at the federal government.
Look at the word that you use to describe it, affordable. A person that's making $150,000 a year can afford something other than a person who's making $20,000 or $30,000 a year. That's key word there, for because
it's the affordable care.
You have some people who was paying less are now paying much, much more for their insurance.
The person making 150, Bianchi, has more options. Yes, he can afford, but he has more options. The person making 40,000, 30,000, he may not have as many options. And I think this is where Affordable Care Act comes in, that these people should not be excluded because of their income. Nathan, what is coming up in the next hour in perspective? Okay. Nathan, I thought you...
My phone was on mute. I was on the road and I forgot to take it. We are talking to Pastor Mwaka. She's one of our team members and part of the ZBTR family. Remember, Ministry, Fresh Aroma International Ministries, is hosting their 10th annual Spring Prophetic Conference beginning April 17th. So we'll be discussing that. And some of the guest speakers who will be here from abroad are also joining us.
Oh, great. So we are looking for a very spirited discussion there. So we are winding down here. Dr. Patrick, thank you for your help.
Roger, can I just say two things? With respect to sunshine in Africa, the answer is solar energy. And if we build solar panels, that could be marketed throughout the global community. And with respect to KK turning 90, I would love one of my dreams is to be an interviewer of President Kuanda.
Thank you for that. And thank you, Pianki. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we have been transitioning. As Obama again said, we were the last industrialized nation that does not provide health care. Here in Canada, I go to Walmart to get a prescription drug. The same prescription I used to get from Walmart in the United States for $75, here in Canada, it cost me about $10, something like that. No more than $10, regardless of how expensive it is. Yes, the taxes may be high, but for healthcare, I think we should all be willing to do anything to provide healthcare and shelter for our people. This be like nations in developing countries. So, Pianki, we will need your contribution, your support to make sure that this law answers the question: how do we pay for it? The basic question has been asked by Dr. Patrick. Do we all need health care? The basic answer is yes. And now from there, that is where we need everyone on the table how we are going to pay for. So this has been your show. We congratulate the people of Afghanistan for standing against the oppression of the Taliban. They were voting in high numbers yesterday. High numbers are voting, and we support those people. The people who want freedom, you cannot stop them. Until next week, my name is Roger. In Sunshine, Okotok. Goodbye. Bonanga,